Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. Near the end of the conclusion in part three of his Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, Immanuel Kant is going to engage in what he considers to be quite important, but not a matter of knowledge, about what he's going to call the natural predisposition, natur anlage, of human reason. And this is speculations or conjectures, not something that we can say is definite knowledge of the nature of the, pun intended, of the topic. And he begins in section 60 saying, "We've exhibited metaphysics according to its subjective possibility, as it is actually given in the natural predisposition of human reason, and in that which constitutes the essential end, the zweck of its pursuit," a term that's going to be used quite a bit in this. And he says that, you know, the merely natural use of such a predisposition of our reason, if no discipline arising only from a scientific critique bridles and sets limits to it, it gets us into transcendent dialectical inferences, and this is a problem, right? So we get a fallacious metaphysics. But then he says, there's still a problem worthy of inquiry, which is to find out the natural ends, the natur zwecke, of what? Of this faculty that we have and of this disposition, this tendency that reason possesses. The natural ends intended by this disposition to what? Transcendent, not transcendental, but transcendent concepts, Begriffe, in our reason. Why is reason like this? Why does it think about things that it can't really know? And he says that, now this is a big kind of assumption here, everything that lies in nature must be originally intended for some useful purpose, or some use, some point to it, right? And Kant will say then in the next paragraph, so this inquiry that we're engaged in, this Untersuchung, is doubtful. Doubtful is a way of translating this term misslich, which also has connotations of like irritating, annoying, right? And he tells us that this is only conjecture, mutmaßung, right? It's not knowledge or cognition or anything like that, but it's conjecture about the ends that nature would have. So he says, this is speculation about these first ends. It may be allowed to me in this case alone. Why? Because we're not dealing with the objective validity, Gültigkeit, of metaphysical judgments, but only our natural predisposition to them. So if we can approach this in a limited, restrained manner, we're not going to fall into any sort of problem. And he says, okay, so when I think about the transcendental ideas, the totality of which constitutes the particular problem of natural pure reason, compelling it to quit the mere contemplation of nature, to transcend all possible experience, and in this endeavor to produce the thing, be it knowledge or fiction, called metaphysics, I think, so this is Kant staking out a claim for himself, I think, I perceive, notice those two modalities, right, that the aim of this natural tendency is what? What is the point of it? To free our concepts, the concepts, you know, that we want to use here, from the fetters, the restrictions of experience, and from the limits of the mere contemplation of nature. So we're getting away from something, right? We're getting away from limitations. And what's the positive then? So at least to open to us a field containing mere objects for the pure understanding, which no sensibility, no Sinnlichkeit, can reach, not indeed for, so what is the point of this? It is to engage in practical principles, not for the purpose of speculatively occupying ourselves, right? But for practical principles that would find scope for their necessary expectation and hope, notice that term hope, and might expand to the universality which reason requires from the moral point of view. So thinking about these transcendental ideas although we can't really make any progress with them, it frees up the moral domain for Kantian ethics, for, you know, the only kind of ethics that Kant considers truly valid. And so how does it do that? Well, he's going to tell us, and he's going to do a review of these, but here's the crux of it. The transcendental ideas are going to destroy the assertions, and he's got these as sort of bad assertions, impudent and restrictive assertions of what? Of three points of view philosophically: materialism, naturalism, and fatalism. Okay, so how does that happen? Well, it has to do with these three types of transcendental ideas. So he says the psychological idea, which doesn't really tell me the nature of the human soul, which is elevated above all concepts of experience, it shows the insufficiency of these concepts plainly enough and thereby deters me from materialism. Why? Because we see that materialism is unfit for any explanation of nature and confines reason in practical respects. So the psychological idea, properly explored, gets rid of materialism, right? Not saying that nothing's material, of course, but the soul or the consciousness can't be. What about the cosmological ideas? Well, we see that there's a particular thing being targeted here. The cosmological ideas, by the obvious insufficiency of all possible cognition of nature to satisfy reason in its legitimate inquiry, serve to keep us from naturalism. Why? Because naturalism asserts nature to be sufficient for itself. That is how Kant is understanding this term, naturalism. So because we, for example, can't say that the universe actually does have limits or boundaries or doesn't, neither of those are going to be actually acceptable, you know, from the point of view of reason considering these, well, that shows us that there's a kind of openness here, a insufficiency that we can look at. What about the theological idea? The ideal of pure reason, as Kant has called it. All natural necessity in the sensible world is conditional, as it is always presupposing the dependence of things on others, and unconditional necessity must be sought only in the unity of a cause different from the world of sense. But the causality of this cause, in its turn, were it merely nature, could never render the existence of the contingent as its consequent comprehensible. Reason frees itself by means of the theological idea from fatalism. And how does Kant understand fatalism? So he says, in two ways. As a blind natural necessity in the coherence of nature itself without a first principle, and as a blind causality of this principle itself, and so then we're led to the concept of a cause possessing freedom and hence of a supreme intelligence. So this natural predisposition of reason, which leads us into the dialectic of pure reason with these transcendent concepts, this winds up freeing us from erroneous points of view about ourselves, the world, and whatever it is that's determining the world as a whole. Now, one of the questions that we can ask ourselves is what Kant, you know, is aiming at with all of these conjectures, is this really metaphysics? And Kant says, no, not specifically. So he'll tell us in a passage that I skipped over, to reserve it for right here, that because this inquiry is of a doubtful nature, we're not concerning the objective validity of metaphysical judgments, but our natural predisposition, he says, therefore, this inquiry does not belong to the system of metaphysics, but to anthropology. Now, that may be a little bit confusing if you are thinking in terms of the contemporary discipline of anthropology, which originally sprang from philosophical anthropology, but then developed into all sorts of other things as well, doing ethnographic studies and playing around with, you know, burial sites and all this other sort of stuff. What Kant means by anthropology here is a study, rigorous systematic study of human beings as such, as, you know, rational creatures, but also as creatures of nature. We are only one potential kind of rational intelligence, right? So when we're restricting ourselves to anthropology, we're saying, how is it for us human beings. Now, a little bit later, he's going to talk about how the dialectic of pure reason being unavoidable, considered in metaphysics as a natural tendency, he says it deserves to be explained not as a mere illusion, but also as a natural provision as regards its end, though this task, and he calls this a work of supererogation, right? The term there is überverdienstlich. Now, supererogation means literally asking for what is above, right? So when we say going above and beyond, metaphysics doesn't have to mess around with this stuff. And so it's not really metaphysics' task. It's something else, a supererogatory task, a supererogatory calling to attain this end. Then he's already talked about this as a scolium, right? An extra little bit. And then he talks about a second scolium, which has a greater affinity with the subject of metaphysics. And let's take a short look at this. He says there are certain rational principles which determine a priori the order of nature, or that of the understanding, which seeks nature's laws through experience. Okay, so far so good. They seem to be constitutive and legislative with regard to experience, though they spring from mere reason, which cannot be considered like the understanding as a principle of possible experience. So what we're looking at here is how is the understanding and reason actually related to each other? And he talks about a harmony, right? And then he talks about a thoroughgoing unity in the use of the understanding to bring about an entirety of all possible experiences. This can only belong to the understanding when in relation to reason, with the result that experience is in this way immediately subordinate to the legislation of reason. Reason is something which gives laws to itself and to the world and also to its lower faculties. And so he says this question may be discussed by those who desire to trace the nature of reason, even beyond its use in metaphysics, into general principles. Now notice the term he's going to use here, for making systematic a history of nature in general. And he says, this is an important task, but I'm not trying to do this in this work. So what would a history of nature in general be? We're not talking just about history in the sense that we think about it as, you know, a chronicle of human affairs. Natural history would be the long history of nature itself, but it would not just be the history of things that we discover in the world, like, you know, how volcanoes work or something like that, because that's still the realm of appearances, right? Representations. We want to figure out how this interesting harmony for human beings between reason, which goes way beyond experience, and the understanding, which is applied to experience, how does this actually work? And Kant says, well, this is close to metaphysics, but it's not metaphysics per se. And this is where he leaves off in this conclusion. So we have a very interesting potential task, set of speculations or conjectures about what is the point of us sort of inevitably going beyond experience into these ideas of pure reason. And here's Kant's answer to that. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.